The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
Oops, he throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. This is episode 36, the Dolphins Review. Matt and Alex, your hosts as always. Alex, we're 7-3. What'd you say?
You know, that was nice. That was easy. That was never in doubt. There was little yelling. It was so good that last night when you said, hey, let's record, I'm like, nah, I don't have anything to talk about. You know, we did what we needed to do, and it was fine. And there was so little to complain about. I was like, there's no way we can get, you know, 30 minutes out of this. I needed to wait for the advanced stats and the breakdowns to come out on Pro Football Focus and some of the advanced stats sites. So now today, Monday, when we're recording this, we have something to talk about. So let's dig into it.
Yes, let's dig into it. So where do we start? Let's start.
Well, the first thing that I have is that touchdown. The first touchdown pass to John Brown was what an NFL franchise quarterback looks like. Josh notices coverage. He audibles the play. He looks off the safety, and he throws a perfect ball. More please.
Yeah, I think this is actually quite good. Now, yes, there was a few, you could call them erratic throws, but maybe it was a case a couple of times. There was one where I think it was nearly intercepted by the defender. It's probably the only really bad one I've seen. But it, from that game, it shows, it's showing us that maybe what McDermott said to him last week, be fearless, and maybe they're starting to open up, and he's starting now to show what he can really do. And with the stretch coming up, we're going to need to see more of that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there was still, I mean, the completion percentage wasn't close to 70, which you would assume in a game that you win like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go look at Lamar Jackson's completion percentage yesterday, was much better than Josh's. Later in the game, I mean, there was that three and out that was silly. That was like mostly all throws, and even though we had the lead, we didn't need to do that. So there were some play calls that hurt Allen's completion percentage. There's a few things that he definitely missed. But we knew that he was more of a project, and we know that Brian Daboll is not the best offensive coordinator. I mean, this isn't a complain podcast because there's nothing to complain about. Everything worked to where it needed to work.
Yeah. On offense, yes.
On offense, yeah. I mean, this is just a perfect example, again, of the fact that you don't need a 300-yard passer.
Yeah.
I mean, Fitz threw for 300. Was anybody happy with his game?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Josh had, aside from starting the first quarter with only field goals, he had a complete game. Every quarter, he did something to keep distance from the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Whenever it looked like Miami was going to claw back, we answered. So this, I would say, is the complete game. I mean, 300 total yards. He had a lot of really good scrambles and just smart plays on third down, just taking what is there and just doing the right thing. It was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, everyone knows my opinion. I don't care. There's a 300. He doesn't have a 300 throwing game. I mean, look at Jimmy Garoppolo against the Cardinals. He threw for like 400 odd yards, but he had about four interceptions to one touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that game. He didn't look on point. I mean, yards don't mean anything. They don't necessarily mean you're playing a good game. I mean, I gave the stat the other day. 300-yard passers at that time were a little bit over 500, but I think since then, over the last 2 weeks, 300-yard passers are by far under 500 in terms of winning percentage. So don't let that be a thing.
Yeah, I'd rather Allen have 300 total yards. Hopefully the majority of it is going to be passing, but total yards, I'd rather see Allen get 300 game in that than just 300 passing, and that's what the offense would focus on.
I think it's because it's not super flashy. I mean, Josh Allen had 312 total yards and 4 total touchdowns, and Lamar Jackson had 308 total yards and 4 touchdowns, and everyone's talking about Lamar Jackson. Let them. Buffalo's in a spot where me as a Buffalonian is exactly where we want to be, as we're not in the conversation. We're still an underdog, even with the record that we have. And that's exactly where I feel the most comfortable.
Yeah, I'm just still going over that, how he fooled the whole Miami defense on that run play option when he tried to hand it off to Singletary. I was watching it. I was thinking, what the hell? How the hell do they not see that? He sold that.
It's really right perfect. I mean, if we could see more of that. I mean, the Bills out of shotgun run. I think it's out of shotgun, we run 17% of the time, which is 25th in the league. If we can maybe incorporate some more run-pass options, then that might be good to keep teams off balance. And again, I'm not advocating for Josh to do more designed runs because I don't want that. He's a better scrambler. But run-pass option clearly seems to work. I mean, you can look at Baltimore, whom – under shotgun, run the ball 45% of the time. That ranks first. That's all run pass option, and that's working for them. But Josh Allen is not Lamar Jackson. You know, he's more of a Steve Young runner than a Michael Vick runner.
Yeah, and so, you'll still have that in inverted commas dual threat option on the run
play. Yeah, it's still there. I mean, teams are still putting a spy on the field, still keeping a linebacker as a spy, which is meaning less guys in the secondary for Josh. So that's good.
Yeah. So I think there are ways that the ball actually can actually expand the playbook. As I say, the more games or more snaps he has from under center rather from the shotgun can actually help quite a bit in his development. I mean, One of the questions and one of the opinions we had on Twitter from Dave Thorpe saying, is playing out the shotgun hurting Allen? Because if he plays from center, it gives the wide receiver more time to make plays and drop back.
Yeah, I mean, I think based on this, I think it's important to see that instead of calling more plays with more substitutions, I mean, I think Dable simplified the offense this week.
Yeah.
And I think for that was what helped Allen the most. But in terms of the question, I think that, I mean, it's very hard to say. I think that our offense is better suited to where the defense isn't expecting a pass. So I think maybe Josh just isn't that great right now against nickel or dime defenses where the defense is expecting pass. That's why I'm saying more run pass options, more play action, which I think everyone's been calling for. I mean, you look at the game flow, Frank Gore and Tyler Kroft only saw time as substitutes this week instead of specific packages. And I think that having the core players on the field helped Allen stay more in a rhythm in terms of pace and in terms of comfort with who's on the field and what the play call is going to be and what the game script is. So if anything, I think that's what was hurting Allen in the past, which is what I said, I think, last week. Dable trusting Allen too much. Now we dial it back. We stay simple. We play smart instead of just throwing it all on him, saying, "Oh, you're ready." That's what I'm gonna say.
Because he had his receiving core mainly for the majority. Obviously, was Brown, Beasley, Knox, McKenzie, Singletary. That's his five. That's the five main offensive weapons.
You saw 0% of Robert Foster. And I mean, if anything, going forward, you're going to see Brown be like the goat. He's getting his targets. He's in the wide receiver one category right now, but
yeah.
It's going to be more Brown and a lot less of those tertiary wide receivers. So less McKenzie, less Foster. If Duke ever gets back on the field, it's not going to be, you know, in a highlighted role.
Yeah.
I mean, it only would be in a highlighted role or due to an injury, but in terms of rotating in, especially with Andre Roberts as well, I mean, it's going to be only Brown, Beasley, McKenzie, and then the tight ends, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that benefits us.
Yeah. I think, obviously, with John Brown, he's what, 871 yards at the moment. He leads all AFC wide receivers in there. But going back to obviously the question, I mean, you can see, I've put it on there previously, that he only played 21% of his pass attempts under center. Obviously, that's probably changed quite a bit. But you can't argue the fact that when he's under center, unless the defense have a linebacker spy, you can get that run. You can get that run play action, and you're keeping with Josh's ability to scramble. You can get more confusion and more success out there because he can take quick drop, step back. And what I've liked against the Dolphins, he had the offensive line protecting that much. So he had about 4 or 5 seconds to go through all his progressions. So under center will help him quite a bit. They should do more about it, in my opinion, because when you've got the run game, when you've got Singletary as he is and what he can do, okay, minus the couple of fumbles, which luckily were recovered, it's the best way to get him through, regardless of the majority of the teams are playing from the shotgun. Why follow the trend, buck the trend, and actually play around his strengths, which is the under center and the play action passes.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the focus of most of our conversations about Josh Allen, is play to his strengths. And but when we hired Dable, he said that that's what he's going to do. That's his focus. And I think that just this year, he had this confidence in Josh that was he's ready. But now I think the notice is let's make it easier for him and then find the sweet spot. And this week we found it, and now it's time to test it against a good defense. But going forward with more Josh, you know, the big focus has been his ability to keep the ball, you know, in the hands of the offense.
Yeah.
We have another game without an interception. And, I mean, he has a better interception rate and less interceptions than Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, Philip Rivers, Jimmy Garoppolo, Sam Darnold, Dak Prescott, and Matt Ryan. And I think going into the season, you would probably take any of those quarterbacks over Josh Allen.
Yes.
And in terms of quarterbacks with 5 or more games without interception, straight games, you only have Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, and oddly, Mariota. But we knew when we did the Titans preview that they just don't turn the ball over because they don't take risks. But removing Mariota, that's company that you want to be in terms of guys who are quarterbacks that people want. So he's making smart decisions. He's making good decisions. And I don't know. There's just not a whole lot to be bothered about except for this week, which is the game that we wanted against the opponent that we had.
Yeah. I mean, he finished with a quarterback rating of 117.7. But as I say, that doesn't really matter that much in what we're going on. But it's what I saw about he's had his, fifth straight 2-touchdown, no interception game, which the last time a Bills player did that was Jim Kelly in 91.
It really makes the middle of that feel so much worse, you know?
Yeah, and I think the last 4 when he's done it, he's joined the likes of Manning and Rodgers and I think a couple of others as the only guy to do it in 4 straight games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of talk, that's the kind of company you want to have in this situation.
I mean, do you think that it's because the ball was in the booth, actually with an overview, and Alan had Ken Dorsey as the go-to guy between De Ball and Alan, and actually talking to Alan more than what De Ball was, and De Ball having a complete overview of the pitch, seeing where he can take advantage of in the Miami defense. Do you think that was potentially a reason as well for it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always preferred my offensive coordinator to be in the booth. I mean, yeah. It gives them a better view of what's really going on. I mean, imagine, you know, watching the game on television, you don't really get to see everything. Being on the field, you get to see, being on the sideline, you get to see a whole lot less.
Mm.
I mean, just the angles are different. I mean, that's why watching the All-22 is so important, to see what really happened in a game. And Dable being up top really gets to see what the defense is doing and what Josh is missing and what he's making, and then what the next play should be based off of the, you know, the flow of how he looks and what the defense looks like. It's just smarter to do that.
Yeah.
But you're right there, though. You have to delegate then a little bit of your responsibility. And that's where the Ken Dorsey comes in, having that one-on-one conversations with Josh. I mean, Dable said the hardest thing being in the booth was having to call down to Josh after series. And, you know, you got to take it when it works. So just deal with that if it bothers you, because being in the booth, I believe, is way more efficient.
Yeah, and with Dorsey, obviously he's been a quarterback in the league. He actually has played the quarterback position. He's obviously worked with Josh and helped him improve most of his mechanics. Yes, there's a few things that still need to be improved on there. But having an actual quarterback actually beside you during a game and having your coordinator up top, I think going forward, that's the change that should need. I think De Ball even came out and said that he preferred to actually be in the booth rather than on the sideline. And I'd quite happily say, stay up there, lock the door, chuck the key in Lake Erie, and don't let him out.
Yeah, I mean, once you find what works, you know, you be superstitious, you know, don't move off of it.
Yeah. And
but some more bits on the offense, though, and just two things that I would like to nitpick is we threw a fade to Brown in the end zone, and that guy is not a jump ball guy, so that was kind of a silly play call, but nothing much to really talk about. The other thing, though, is Isaiah McKenzie was 3 for 6 on 21 yards. Would you rather see those targets go to Foster or Duke Williams instead?
It depends. It depends on where where they were when they actually made those passes. Was it shortish yard, or was it actually ones from?
No, I mean, I would say that they were like legit wide receiver routes where just Allen is either missing him or McKenzie's just not running a complete route. I mean, I get that he can stretch the field and is a threat with a jet sweep. It keeps defenses honest and guessing, but I need my receivers to be more than 50% on their attempts. And I think that a more rounded wide receiver would be Foster or Duke, but I mean, I know Duke's not the best route runner, so I don't. It's hard to see who the best third wide receiver on this team is, and I think that Dawson Knox isn't ready for, you know, multiple, you know, like double-digit targets yet. And, and I mean, Tyler Croft, where are you?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, clearly second on the depth chart.
He's going to be in serious trouble when it come the offseason, potentially, and he's got a team-friendly cut, so won't be hit with too much dead money or cap space.
It just depends on how comfortable they feel with Sweeney coming out of practice, you know, what he looks like in practice, and a lot less of Lee Smith this week, so we didn't have that typical Lee Smith kind of penalty breakdown.
Yeah.
So that was good.
I mean, one last question before we move onto the defense. Would you class now John Brown as the legitimate number one wide receiver, not just for Buffalo, but for in the NFL? He's on pace for 1,300 yards, which would be the most or second most, depending on where he finishes in Bills history, to Eric Mould's. He's obviously, he's 10 games, again, of 50 or more passing yards, which is, I believe, not just a Bills record, but I believe also an NFL record as well. So do you class him as a true number one, or do you still think there is someone out there, whether it be in the draft or someone on the team like a Duke Williams or anything like that, which could then come in and take that number one?
I absolutely think that we could get someone to take over for him and be more. There's just, I mean, in baseball, you talk about a five-tool player, someone who could do literally everything. And John Brown is like one tool short of being a complete receiver, and that would be height. But in terms of usage, we're using him correctly. He's 10th in the league in yards per game. He's 8th in the league in total yards. He's got a 65.9% catch rate, which is better than Cooper Kupp and Julio Jones and Mike Evans. I mean, the targets are there. He's top 15 in targets. So he is, in terms of stats, a legit number one receiver. That's based on the usage. I mean, yeah. Obviously you would call Odell Beckham a number one receiver, but in terms of stats, he's not anywhere close to being anywhere where John Brown's usage is. So, I mean, looking at players who are ahead of him in terms of yards per game, Cooper Kupp right now with Cooks out, he's the number one. He's killing it. Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, Michael Thomas. I mean, who of that group is not a number one receiver?
Drop the names again.
Cooper Kupp. I mean, so oddly, the way the Cowboys are using Gallup, he's also up there in yards per game. But number nine, Cooper Kupp. Number eight, Michael Gallup. Number seven, Julio Jones. Number six, Amari Cooper. Number five, Chris Godwin. Number seven, Devontae Adams. Number three, Tyreek Hill. Number two, Mike Evans. Number one, Michael Thomas. I'd say eight of those guys are, in fantasy football, going to get drafted as a number one wide receiver.
Yeah. Yeah.
And John Brown's 10th. So if you look at, you know, people say number one wide receiver because I think of fantasy football more than anything, you know, who on your depth chart is the guy that you have. And John Brown's in that conversation. I mean, just below him, Diggs, Lockett, Hopkins, you know, in terms of yards per game. So he's being used as a go-to guy and it's working. We're winning with it. He's converting. And, you know, I don't need that title. Just like I don't need a 300-yard game from Josh Allen. All yeah. I know is that it's working and we need to keep with it.
Yeah. I mean, I would go over, well, I'm going to save it about for another episode about who we could look at going forward, whether it be free agency or draft, as the as potentially a true number one for Josh Allen. But in the interest, as we are only going to talk really about the Dolphins game itself, let's move on to...
Well, the last bit on offense, I think it's important to talk about the Ty Nsekhe injury.
Yeah.
It means more Cody Ford, which is kind of what you wanted, a legitimate, you know, snap count right tackle. But next week versus Derek Wolfe and DeMarcus Walker will be a big test for a guy who's struggled in pass protection.
That's so, why...
I mean, where's the feeling there?
That's why I wanted them to actually do it a lot earlier, because... You get to the situation where you're down it. If they're happy to still do the rotation, that's fine. But you've always got a plan for pretty much season-ending injuries. The fact that they didn't get Ford more snaps during the season at right tackle over Nsekhe means coming into a stretch where you have got all these skill pass rushers, that you're now putting him under pressure because he's been sharing, sometimes getting less snaps than Nsekhe, and you're expecting him then to go out and actually stop Von Miller on the edge. I think if if he had more snaps during the season, yeah, he'll keep rotating to keep him sharp, keep his mind fresh. But giving him more over the season would have helped him be prepared for any of unfortunate situations where Nsekhe now obviously is out for the season and going forward into the stretch.
Yeah, I'm worried about it. And I think in this situation, I think we're going to see Josh under center probably a lot more going next week. But yeah, you want to see Nsekhe come back. The word on it right now isn't good or bad. It's just wait and see. But, I mean, leaving the field on the cart in an air cast is bad for a guy who is getting 50% of the snaps on your offensive line. So, I mean, if another guy goes down now, you're looking at some trouble. We've been, knock on wood, remarkably lucky with health. So let's hope Nsekhe comes back. Because I think what's going on now is working. So I would look to next year as being the Cody Ford starter year, because when you identify a weakness in someone's game, it's very, very difficult to fix it during the season.
Yeah.
So we've identified the ability to have it work, which is rotation, and I think that if they can fix it in the off season, that's when the focus should be. But right now we have a week to get it fixed, so we'll see what happens there. But now on to the defense.
Yeah, I mean, if I said to you, and this has come from Sean Milan on Twitter, if I said to you Milano played very well, played really fast game, speed, closing in on the ball, carrier exceptional, obviously has played lights out in Dolphins, what would you say to that and obviously the defense as a whole?
Well, even though the announcers, and I'll say this every week, were idiots for most of the game, they did a really good job of calling out how well Trey Edmonds and Matt Milano played all game in terms of being in position and hitting the gaps, chasing down guys, being in the right spot. I mean, Milano is a diamond in the rough. He's going to be, to me, should be on the Pro Bowl ballot. Could make it as an alternate, you know, because when Pro Bowl time comes, guys, fourth, fifth, sixth alternates are making it. But it's so great because in the last game he wasn't there and the Dolphins were able to run. And now they weren't because Milano's there, and it's just, knock on wood, man. I mean, there is no depth on this team. There's very rarely any depth on any NFL team. Once a backup comes in, you're in trouble. But right now, everything on that defense is clicking again.
Yeah.
And we're going to need to stop the run again next week because the Broncos can't throw, but they can run. And, we'll see. But, just a complete game from Edmonds, who gave that rousing speech in the locker room. A quiet guy stood up and put his foot down, and I think it stuck, which is really important to see guys, have that happen.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins pretty much abandoned the run again. 13 attempts, 23 yards.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't working for them. I mean, holes weren't opening, and we were hitting our gaps, and just everybody was playing smart, and it was mistake-free football on the defense.
Yeah.
I mean, every now and then it's going to happen where a receiver makes a catch, and it happened with Devontae Parker. But like I said, every time Miami did something, we answered. So it was inconsequential, the kind of game that Devontae Parker had. So it was fine.
And you don't usually hear his name called, but on Sunday you heard it called for a good reason, which was Star in his and the sack, one of seven by that defense.
Yeah, more please. Again, I mean, give me all of the sacks. I think going in, we were talking about, or at least some talk around the team was about getting pressure from all over the field. And Leslie Frazier really dialed it up. We got pressure. We got, sacks. We got stats now for everyone, for everywhere. I mean, Ed Oliver blew up a play. Shaq Lawson was all over the field. I mean, I saw Ed Oliver chase down a player on a great dude. Just has the motor. Finally played over 50% of the snaps. So Ed Oliver was noticeable. Trent Murphy less so. Shaq Lawson had a really good game, and I think you're going to start to see that happen more, where it's going to be 60-40 Shaq, 65 Shaq, and he's earning the playing time.
Mm. I think we're still there's still worry about the pass rush itself. I mean, Jerry's only on like 3.5, Shaq's on 2, maybe 3 sacks. Murphy, I think he's got 1. So there's still a bit of a ooh ah. That's something they're gonna have to look at, because if you can get that pressure on the edge, you've got Trey White locking down a side, you've got Poyer and Hyde locking down the center. If you can get that extra pass rusher in there, you're going to cause more turnovers on anything. So I think that's something that they're potentially going to look at in the draft. I know there are.
Well, we're ninth in the league in sacks, so
yeah,
we're getting it done.
Well,
I mean, if you look at a team like the Bears, I mean, they're 15th in sacks, so we have more sacks than the Bears, who had that vaulted defense. So.
I think we have Jordan Phillips to thank for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest issue that I could have in going off of what you said about getting to the quarterback, our QB hurries per drop back is at 7.7%. That's in the bottom quarter of the league. You'd want that to be somewhere around 10%.
Yeah.
So we're not getting enough pressure yet, but when we get the sack, I mean, those are coming. But I want to see more QB hurries, QB pressures. This is hurries plus knockdowns plus all sacks. We're at 20%, which is, again, bottom quarter of the league. So that number needs to get better. You would expect it to be higher because the corners, I mean, our secondary is so good that we should be getting to the quarterback more. So,
yeah.
We all want the big splash in terms of free agent or draft pick, but I bet you we're going to draft a defensive end in the first round next year.
Possibly, I think.
It depends on who's available and everything, but I think that's going to be a focus for this regime. You know, McDermott's going to be a vocal, you know, kind of player in terms of who we're going to take. But that's in a few weeks. We don't need it. I'm used to talking about draft at this point, but we don't need to. No, so
I'm looking forward to it.
7-3, things are looking good. Pass rush, get better, get that number up. But lastly, what sucked?
Well, special teams.
What was that? I mean, that doesn't happen anymore in this league.
No, I think it was a good for special teams played by the Dolphins on that onside kick. I think no one was, not even I was expecting, probably not even the commentators were expecting him to do that. But luckily for us, the very next play, it was there was a fumble recovered by Poyer. So that one, you couldn't really blame the special teams for. But what happened on that 101-yard return, I have no idea. Some are saying, and what I've seen on some reports, is the fact that Saron Neal, who's been our best special teams player, he was out with concussion pretty much from the first few plays.
Yeah.
And he's the best special teams player. He's playing in the middle, so he's going to be the one that's going to be closer to either the punt returner or the kick returner to make that initial challenge. And with him gone, they've obviously had to adapt. And I think I've counted, two or three missed tackles, which were easy tackles or should have been easier tackles to make back inside the Miami 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not like Miami's a good special teams, a unit. I mean, who isn't, I mean, who cares, you know? I mean, you got to be good at all three phases of the game. No, shut up.
Yeah.
But the league as a whole is on pace for 9 return touchdowns this year. Just 10 years ago, there was 18 total. So this is a thing that is an anomaly, and I wouldn't look at it as a issue. I would say more it was just a fluke.
Yeah.
If it happens again next week, then I would say that there's a consistent problem because guys aren't hitting their lanes or their gaps any better. And the onside kick, too, I mean, that was just – I mean, yeah, that'll happen. I mean, you'll see it every few weeks. Someone does something fun and silly, and it works. So that's great. Good job.
Yeah, I think we've got – I've got one last question. I'm moving back onto the defensive side on it. It's something that I know has been up for discussion quite a bit on Twitter, on forums and all that, is the Kevin Johnson and Levi Wallace cornerback two debate. I mean, I will hands up admit, I still think Wallace will be a good cornerback. I think I may have put the kiss of death on him when I said a few weeks back that he's been the best player or the most unsung player. But can you actually see a point where they're now going to look more towards, especially towards this stretch where you've got the likes of Cooper, Gallup, Gordon, Harry, not Gordon, sorry. He's gone to Seattle. Harry, who else the Patriots got wide receiver wise?
Edelman, Sanu, Dorsett. I mean, you're going to continue to see Trey follow the number ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Levi's been beat here and there. I mean, he was never supposed to be a starter, but the dude put his foot down and said, I can do it, and he, for the most part, has. I'm not going to be worried about it until it becomes, like, very consistent or until he gets benched or something because he has had good games. So maybe it's just the grind of the season because guys just wear down.
Yeah.
So I mean, I wouldn't doubt to see a corner get drafted early or some free agents coming in. It happens. It's the most, like, on defense, I would say, with how the league is so passing right now, it's very important. So teams bring guys in all the time, and it's always a constant focus. But I wouldn't be too worried about it yet.
Yeah.
We don't play – I mean, Dallas has two. Denver doesn't. They only have one wide receiver, so – this week, I think, is going to be a week where we don't need to worry about him too much. I think next, in the Thanksgiving game will be.
Yeah. Ravens, sort of, yes, with Marquise Brown.
The only thing you need to focus on with the Ravens is Lamar Jackson and his rushing ability. That's going to be one hell of a pre-game podcast for us because there's going to be a lot to break down for that, but let's worry about that later. The Bills are 7-3. They beat a good, they beat a team that they should have, and they beat him decidedly.
Yeah. Okay. So before we sign off, quick off the top of your head, your player of the game and your donkey of the game.
Player of the game, John Brown. Donkey of the game, whoever missed that tackle on special teams.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, it was such a complete game that there wasn't one play or one player that consistently did poorly.
Yeah.
So it was great. Yeah.
So I think I put it out on Twitter every game time after the game. Please do get in touch with us to actually let us know who you think the player and the donkey of the game is, because, as I say, we like to see and hear your views. This is, as I say, this is what we always say the podcast is about. The podcast is for you, and I'm trying to look through. We had Dave Thorpe come in with his player of the game. Actually, he couldn't choose, so he chose Allen, John Brown, and Matt Milano. But this is what we want to hear from you guys. When we tweet out from the podcast Twitter account, which is at RWBB_podcast, or the main account, when we ask for your opinions, questions about the game, your players, the game, please, please do interact with us, because as much as me and Alex like to talk to each other and banter, discuss, talk stats, we also want to get you guys involved, hear your views, and maybe even discuss any views and opinions you may have. So keep those coming in. and we'll hopefully review them going forward. So, is there, before we sign off, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good. I mean, if there's anyone out there that has anything to complain about this game, come and find me. All right, we'll have a conversation.
He'll be eating chili after he's burnt his tongue.
Oh my God, I've been working on chili for the last like 3 hours. I'm very meticulous about it. I mean, I made my own chili paste. I grinded my own chili mix, then created a paste, and I just took out right before the podcast. I took it out to taste it. And oh my God, I was a little bit too quick with it, and I am just on fire right now.
And coming up on the cooking hour.
Yeah.
No, but if there's nothing else there, we'll wrap it up. We'll be back on Thursday for the Broncos preview. Hopefully, we may potentially have a guest, maybe. But if that's the case, we'll bring that onto the podcast as well. But for me and for Alex with his burnt tongue, it is good evening, good afternoon, good morning. Keep on subscribing, downloading, reviewing, follow and interact with us on all social media, and go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Yeah, not us.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.